Greetings. I'm Bill Kladke, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Josh Tolkien, who's director of the Maryland chapter of the Sierra Club. And this is the second of two shows we're doing with Josh. Today, we're talking about the various conservation campaigns that his organization is doing and opportunities for us to help and to help the environment. So, Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I know you're busy, and so we're glad you could come back. First of all, for those of our listeners that didn't hear the last show, could you tell us a little bit about the Sierra Club and you know, your organization's history?
Absolutely. So the Sierra Club is our country's oldest and largest grassroots environmental organization. We were founded over 100 years ago by John Muir, the legendary outdoorsman. And I joke that it was John Muir and a bunch of old white men who liked to hike in the woods. You know, it started off as a group really focused on conservation of nature, very specifically on that. We've evolved over the last 100 years into an organization that sees protection of the environment more broadly, looking at human health and the environment, people and the planet, sustainable communities. We believe in grassroots organizing and community power. So in Maryland, which is the area that I work in, we have just 7 staff people, but we have over 18,000 members that are active in a variety of ways to really make a difference in protecting the environment for people and for the earth, at the local level in Baltimore, at the state level, and contributing, you know, to our national work.
Great, great. How can someone find out more information?
Well, almost all of our events are open to the public, so you can go to our website, sierraclub.org/Maryland, and check out the calendar, which is sierraclub.org/Maryland/calendar, and you'll find all sorts of events that we have. Once COVID restrictions are lifted, we'll have several outings where you can go hiking or biking or see nature every weekend, and educational activities to learn more about different environmental issues and how to make a difference.
Great, great. Are you from Maryland?
My dad grew up in Prince George's County. I personally was born in California. So don't hold it against me, but I've been out here for about 20 years now.
I was born in California too, Josh.
Well, California is a wonderful place, but I am in Maryland for the long haul now.
Yep, I know what you mean. I've been here 30-something years, so I'm not going anywhere. And
right.
And Maryland's a wonderful place, but let's talk about the state of the environment in Maryland. How is the environment doing, for example, in Baltimore and in regions of Maryland?
Well, the more we learn, the more we realize that people and our health rely so much on the environment. So there's a lot more that we're learning all the time. But here's a little bit of a snapshot. On air quality, which is one of the most important factors, the Baltimore region still has poor air quality. We violate the Clean Air Act in several different ways. Most people are familiar with your code red and code orange smog days every summer.
Mm-hmm.
We're moving in the right direction, but people in this region still every year breathe unhealthy, unsafe air. Our water quality, drinking water is generally good, though there are definitely the need to upgrade some of our drinking water and our water infrastructure. But there's a lot that we can do to improve the built environment. What I'm talking about is transit or parks. The way that people interact with each other, our community spaces, which lead us to be spending more time building community than, let's say, driving or just seeking out the next, like, commercial physical product that we need to buy to keep ourselves entertained. Maryland has such beautiful natural resources, but not a lot of people have access to them. Some of them are private, and a lot of them don't have access via public transportation. So there's a lot more that we need to do to connect people with all of these wonderful opportunities in Baltimore City and Baltimore County and the region.
Yeah, does this does it vary, I guess, once you get out of the Baltimore area and Montgomery, Prince George's area, the public transportation goes down to almost zero, huh?
That is true. The more rural you get, the less public transit there is. There are some bus systems in our more rural counties. Every county in the state has some type of bus system, usually commuter buses. But we could use a lot more bus routes in our tourist destinations, from Ocean City to Deep Creek Lake. There's a lot of cases where that type of transit system would benefit tourism and it would benefit the local economy. But even right here in Baltimore, we know that our transit system can and must be better than it is. You know, we deserve a light rail system like the Red Line. We need a system that really focuses on working class people and being able to get them to the job opportunities they need. And that helps the environment, but it also helps the economy and increase equity, because we know that access to public transit is one of the most significant indicators of whether somebody can escape from poverty and improve their economic situation.
Right. And to get them away from cars, et cetera, would make the air better, as you mentioned, and would also help our respiratory diseases, huh? Because that's the result of it.
Absolutely. We need to get some people out of cars, but we also need to remember that the most consistent transit users are people who might not have cars from the start.
Right.
So, you know, our transit system has to work for the people for whom it's a necessity, but it really should help encourage more people, you know, not just to get out of their cars, but to use the cars less. This doesn't have to be a binary decision. The question is whether or not you have to jump back in the car every time you want to go to the grocery store, every time you want to go out to dinner, or do we have more options that allow us to bike and walk and take the bus?
Right, right. Let's talk about your conservation campaigns to address some of these problems that we've identified. Beyond coal, that's one that I would hope that everybody's interested in and interested in it succeeding.
Yeah. So in our world, we like to name the campaigns around our goals and really organize around what we believe the world can and should look like. The Beyond Coal campaign is focused on moving off of using coal as a power source. It's really polluting. It creates a lot of particulate matter. It's especially bad for young people and the elderly, and contributes to poor air quality in the region. It's time to move off of coal, but we should do so in a way that's sustainable for the communities that maybe have relied on coal for a long time. So the Beyond Coal campaign seeks to retire all of Maryland's coal-fired power plants, and there's six of them, two of them in Anne Arundel County, right near, within Baltimore City's, air impact zone. And we want to make sure that there's a state fund to help workers and communities re-envision their economy and also their spaces. You know, there's a couple places that are right on the water that could be beautiful parks or commercial shipping and import areas instead of just, lying vacant when these places close. So it's about trying to create a better vision for moving off of coal and then on to clean energy, and then ensuring that there's more good family-sustaining jobs in solar and wind power, which we see growing, but we need it to grow even faster.
Yeah, so there is being, so progress is being made.
Progress is being made. Maryland is slowly on track to bring a big offshore wind project off of the coast of Ocean City, two large projects with several hundred wind turbines. You know, we're seeing solar grow in the state. Most people driving out on the eastern shore or up north have seen these large wind farms. Solar farms. We need to bring more solar into the area so that we can harness the power of the sun. Make it easier for people to get get solar on their roofs of either their homes or even getting it on apartment buildings or vacant lots. It is growing, but still not fast enough when you consider the threat of climate change and you consider the air quality in our region. We should be moving much faster.
Yeah, that's for certain. The dilemma, though, of course, is the objection that I seem to read more often is the cost.
Yep. So there's two ways to look at the cost. The first cost is what we call the externality, which is all of the costs that dirty energy have on our communities that don't fit into the simple price tag. When we talk about the cost of coal that you pay on your electricity bill, we're not talking about the cost of a mother's missing work needing to bring her kid in to the emergency room because of severe asthma. We have an astronomically high asthma rate in this area. We're not talking about the impacts of climate change from sea level rise or severe weather or wildfires. So that is such a, when you think about the difference in cost between coal and other resources, and then you think about all of those damaging costs of coal. But on top of it, coal's getting more expensive because we're finding it harder to extract and we're starting to understand the environmental costs, while the cost of solar is going down. So we know the transition is going to happen. The real question is, are we going to have the coal industry hold out as long as it can for the last second? Or are we going to make an intentional transition from a fuel that's on its way out towards the places that we want to go? But the cost difference at this point between coal and solar and wind is pretty marginal. And in a lot of cases, wind is actually beating out coal as a cheaper alternative.
That's great. That's great. And I know that all of this is part of your drive for 100% clean, renewable energy.
Yep. They go hand in hand. We're moving off of dirty energy and towards clean energy. You know, we're putting more tools in the hands of individual consumers to be able to purchase solar for their homes. But we also are trying to drive the right public policy decisions. You know, just last week, Baltimore County announced that they were doing a huge purchase of solar energy, that they're putting it on a retired landfill. And it took them like 4 years to get through all of the bureaucratic hurdles in order to get that solar farm set up on the landfill, which shows that it's possible, but it also shows that there's a lot that we can do to make those types of great projects go a lot faster. So we're encouraging communities, cities and counties and mayors and county executives to first commit to moving to 100% clean energy. And there's a pledge that people can take on the website. If you just Google Ready for 100, it'll bring you right to the Sierra Club page where people can push their mayors or county executives to make that clean energy pledge and then help them develop the tools to get there. So that's one of the ways we're sort of working at the community level around clean energy, because it doesn't matter how small your municipality or county is. Well, obviously Baltimore City is large, but if you live in any of the smaller surrounding areas, everybody needs to do their part.
Right, right. Speaking about the community, how can the community help? How can our listeners help the progress of that you're describing that is in an early stage in some of these things? What can they do?
Well, every time we push an elected official to do the right thing, somebody's going to push back. Somebody has a vested interest. They make money off of it. So we always send out emails and phone calls to let people know what's happening, and we provide people with the tools to contact their elected official. So when we were fighting to improve our transit system earlier this year, we sent out emails at every stage telling people what legislators needed to get a phone call or an email, or if you're on Twitter, how to tweet at them. So if you go to our website, sierraclub.org/Maryland, and click on the button that says sign up, you can sign up for our newsletter. And then we'll give you information about all of the issues coming up in your area. If you're really psyched right now, just pick up the phone and give us a call, 301-277-7111. Leave us your name and phone number and let us know you want to volunteer, and we'll have a volunteer reach out to you to tell you about what's going on in your area. You know, right now in Baltimore City, Mayor Brandon Scott has several important initiatives, has really stepped up showing leadership around reducing waste and improving air quality. So one thing I do want to say to all your listeners is sometimes you have to push the volunteer, the elected officials. Sometimes you have to back them up. And right now, Brandon Scott is taking several major steps around waste and air quality, and you can find more information on our website or at his website, and try to, you know, find the opportunity to show public support for the things that the administration are doing that's in the right direction, so that they know that people like that, because they need encouragement too.
That's That's great. Absolutely. Absolutely. Unfortunately, though, Josh, that's all we have time for today.
Remember, if you need training in fair housing, call the Maryland Commission on Civil Rights at 410-767-8600, Español Marca El Dos, or 1-800-637-6247, or go to mccr.maryland.gov on the net, or call me at 410-929-7640. It's free, and it will help.
I want to thank our guest, Josh Tolkien, who's director of the Maryland chapter of the Sierra Club, for being our guest today. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Keep up your good work for all of us. For living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.